This is an RTRFM podcast. RTRFM is a community organisation and relies on volunteer and listener support. To learn more about what we do, visit rtrfm.com.au.
Maybe we can shift a little bit away from trauma. I want to hear stories of their truth, their own personal truth, and plays that Indigenous people act in, but they're not Indigenous identified roles.
Kaya, hello and welcome to Songlines, RTRFM's award-winning podcast about First Nations creatives and the path they are paving for the next generation of storytellers. Today on the program, we are joined by actor Bobby Henry. After taking a long break to raise her three sons, Bobby returned to the stage with a bang in 2019 when she starred in Cracked by Barbara Hostelek. Before then, but especially since, she has been an indomitable figure in the local theatre scene, starring in productions with Yuri Arkham Theatre Company and Black Swan State Theatre Company. Bobby has also worked with Australian Children's Television Foundation and has appeared in several short films based in WA. I can't wait to share this conversation with you. It's Jaren, and this is Bobby Henry. Hiya, Bobby. Thank you so much for coming in today. How are you doing?
I'm well, Cesara. Thank you for having me in today. Sorry it's taken so long.
Oh, no, you know what? We got here eventually, and I think that's the important thing, you know what I mean?
I agree.
So, for the people listening, me and Bobby have actually worked together on quite a few, two projects, and have known each other now for 4 years now.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, that is impressive.
Yes. Since the Hecate days.
Yes. Oh, good Lord. I was a absolute baby when
you
we did that.
You were a baby.
And I was no longer scared of you. I saw her in Cracked, which I'll talk about later. And she was like, really, really good in that, right? And that was kind of the problem, where she was really, really good. And I was like, oh, no, I can't go say hi. My dad's not here to introduce me to her, so I'm not going to do it myself.
Oh, you should have come up and said hi.
Yeah, well, here we are, many, many years later. So, onto the podcast. We can talk more about us later. This podcast spans the Noongar seasons, and today we find ourselves in Jaren. Jaren spans April and May, and it's where we start to see the weather cool down. It's also known as the season of adulthood. Do you have any fond memories from this time of year?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
The smell of grass at my grandmother's house. Nature.
Mm.
And its beauty. And the cooling down and the cooler days and the cooler evenings. I remember growing up in a public housing house with my grandmother, and it was double bricked, no air conditioning. And in the summer, it was like an oven, because those double brick houses would absorb all the heat.
Oh, God.
And then release it all at night time. So it was so hot. So I really appreciate the cooling down of the weather, but not too cold. This is perfect.
This is the perfect weather.
Yeah.
But as soon as you have to start putting on jumpers and things,
yeah, like,
that's the difference between us. I love the time of year where I can put on jumpers.
Yeah, my son's like that. They can style up in the winter.
That's what it is. It's so much easier to style up in the winter.
Yeah.
God. Summer clothing, get on to it. Let's start at the beginning. Who is your mob and where'd you grow up?
Okay, so my name is Bobby Henry. I'm a Noongar woman from southwest of Western Australia. My mob are Davises and Henrys and Ronans and Winmars. My father's side's Yamaji, and my grandmother's side, it's interesting that you asked me that, Cesara, because right now in my artistic practice, I'm really curious about disconnection of culture, disconnection of language, and I'm exploring that. So my great-grandmother was taken from Gidja country up north, Turkey Creek way, when she was seven, and brought down to Moore River. So there's that matriarchal disconnection.
Mm.
So when I say Noongar, it's been Noongar for the last three generations. But culturally, my matriarchal lineage is up north.
Oh!
So when I get asked to do Welcome to Countries, firstly, I'm not an elder and I can't. But if I were to in the future, I don't feel comfortable doing it. I'd like to do an acknowledgement, but it just doesn't sit well with me.
Because the Noongar came in.
Yeah, through that disconnection, through colonisation. The man she married, who was a Davis, so she was Alice McPhee, and she married a Davis man, William Davis, and he was part Sheik and part Aboriginal. But again, he wasn't from Noongar country.
Ah.
He was from up north. So the Noongar connection comes from my Maguire side.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I really want to get back up to Gidja country and reconnect.
That side of the family too. That makes so much sense. I'm learning so many new things as we do this, and we've already known each other for 4 years. Look at this. This is so much fun. As you know, I think I have a feeling we've actually talked about this before for a thing I did a couple of years ago, but for the audience and also for my brain, who fails to remember things occasionally, when did your love for theatre start and how did you get involved into it?
My love for theatre started with my grandmother's brother, who was Jack Davis, and he was an Indigenous playwright. He was one of the first Indigenous playwrights, started in the late 70s. And he'd done a play called Dreamers, and a lot of family members like Lynette Narkle, who's my auntie, Aaron Henry, we all had the opportunity to perform in a play called Burringen when I was 15. So my mother gave me permission to leave school after year 10.
Hey!
Took off on tour with, I think it was at the old Playhouse Theatre.
Oh, wow.
It's not there anymore. And yeah, that was my first taste of theatre, and Nana Dot Collard was in that, who is my grandmother's sister.
So you went on tour at the age of 15 years old?
At the age of 15 years old.
That would have been the wildest thing to do at that age.
It was
too.
Pretty wild. And we had a tutor from long distance education who tried to come in and tutor us.
Oh, no, that wouldn't have worked out.
No, it didn't work out too well. She tried to give us young Indigenous kids some culture, and when we went to all these capital cities, she'd take us to national museums and look at all this art, and we were just so exhausted from doing shows.
Yeah. Were there many of you young ones in that show?
There was Aaron Henry, myself, John Moore. There was three of us.
Yeah. That's kind of cute, though, three of you just getting to...
And it's a great way to be introduced to theatre, like you get to travel with your mob.
There's nothing, like I've never done a tour before, but like from what I've heard, there's nothing quite like doing a tour in the way that it just becomes your entire...
It becomes your entire life, yeah.
And doing that at 15. How long was that tour for?
2 months.
Oh, wow.
And then we went to Melbourne and they were remounting No Sugar for the Edinburgh Festival, but I left and came home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, valid. 2 months away? Good gosh. I mean, is Edinburgh Festival, but, you know, that can happen some other time. So I guess you kind of answered this, but was theatre an idea beforehand? Like, were you a theatre kid at school or did it just kind of come about suddenly? No,
acting something that's always interested me.
Yeah.
Watching old movies and films with my grandmothers, and I've always wanted to be an actor or a dancer. But, yeah, then the opportunity came up, so I grabbed the bull by the horns, so to say.
You bloody well did, didn't you? You did a lot in, like, a short amount of time.
Yes.
You did a bunch of plays, like, with Black Swan State Theatre Company back in the day. You did the short film
Pilbara Pearl,
which, I, by the way, I have now seen, everybody. It was so much fun. And they all kind of really kicked off and then you stepped away for 20 years.
Yep. So I'd done the second series of Genie Down Under. And then after that, I stepped back because I had my son. He was 4 at the time to raise him. And then in the meantime, I happened to have another 2 children. So that took up 20 years of my life.
Was that a tricky decision to make, to step back from the spotlight?
It was, But for my own, centre, I had to do it.
Yeah. Mm. Especially, like, I get a grant, like a tiny bit of it, but especially from, because you were involved so young, it was like all your formative years were based around who you were in the arts.
Exactly.
And trying to find who you are outside of that can be really, really tricky when it's just kind of your whole world and it's everybody you know.
Yeah, very much so. Like my family's either in the arts or in health.
Yeah.
Or working for some government organisation. So I tried the other avenues. I tried my psych degree. I deferred. And then I tried WAPA. I got into WAPA. But left after 6 months. It didn't feel culturally safe for mm-hmm. me there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then came back and got the opportunity to step back on stage again, and it was really exciting.
So the show that Bobby's talking about is Cracked by Barbara Hostelek, which mm-hmm. was in 2019, in like somewhere mid-year, I think.
Yep.
What was that like? Like, how did that come about?
So I got back to Perth because I moved to Darwin for 10 years, so I was really disconnected from the whole scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back from Darwin and met my now husband, Derek Nanup.
Love you, Derek.
And he took me into Yiriyarkin Theatre Company, and I had done a show with Yiriyarkin in 1994 called Run Amok,
mm-hmm.
one of David Milroy's first shows, co-directed with Lynette Narkle.
What a team!
Yeah, that was awesome.
Derek took you into the
And then Derek
office.
Took me back into the theatre, and everybody was like, oh, Bobby, great to see you, great to see you. And then Kyle Morrison said, would you like to audition for Cracked? And I'm like, yeah, I'd love to. So I went in that day on the stage and done the audition and got the part.
And here you are.
And here I am.
Here you are. So it was a particularly intense show to come back into because it spoke it's about Frankie as she kind of rages her way through the criminal justice system.
Criminal justice system, meth addiction.
What was that like for you, not only coming back into the arts after so long, but then coming back with such like a intensive bang?
I think the intensive bang, I live for that stuff.
You do. We both do.
And I thrive on it. And it was a really meaty role.
Mm.
Barbara Hostelek is such a beautiful writer.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And I grabbed the bull by the horns and there was no stopping me. But the content of the piece is very poignant for this time, especially in Perth.
Mm.
About meth addiction. So it was really quite confronting.
Mm.
And I had to take great personal care with my own spirit.
Yeah. Because you played a couple of roles that are quite intense and can get quite personal. We'll move on to talk about Lady Mac in a second, everybody. But how do you have a specific way that you look after yourself, or does that tend to shift depending on what each show needs from you?
I have a specific way that I take care of myself and my spirit. Like if I've got a show that night, I can't do anything.
Mm.
Like somebody says, oh, you want to do an interview or you want to come in and do this, do a couple of hours at the office. It's like, no, I need the whole 8 hours of the day to prepare for this show in the evening. So it takes time,
mm-hmm.
But I think it's really, really important. And I think what's also important is the process in the rehearsal room.
Yeah.
And how we're supported and taken care of, that really helps me in my own personal journey through the show.
Mm. So kind of that's a really, like, good point to bounce off to talk about Heckett. Which I'm assuming if you're listening to this, like, you probably know what Heckett was, but in case you don't, it was a 2020 Perth Festival production. And it was an adaptation and translation of Macbeth entirely into Noongar. It was directed by Carly Bracknell and translated by her and her husband, Clint Bracknell. And it was a wild time. And also, the first time that we ever met.
Yes.
And I made some really, really silly jokes that first week. It's one thing to do a Rolex Lady Mac. In English, she's a
force to be reckoned with, yeah.
And then you add doing it in a language that you've only just started learning.
Mm-hmm.
How did you grapple with that? Like, how did you come to the decision that, yes, this is something you were going to do and this was something you were ready to do?
Going back to that disconnection of language mm-hmm. and of matriarchal lineage, the time Hecate came to me was a really important part of that journey.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get the opportunity to learn language at home, so it was a way for me to connect to my being Yunga.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found it a real challenge because, of course, the trauma behind colonisation and the reason why language was taken in the first place, you have to work through that personally mm-hmm. and overcome the anger that can bring and the sorrow that can bring and the loss of language.
And that was something that, hence why I mentioned the bounce off, that was something that Kylie was so good at.
Yeah. So Kylie
facilitating.
Kylie Bracknell was our director and she was also the translator, as Cez said. But I cannot thank Kylie enough for how she held us all so safely in that mm-hmm. space. And for me, the process in the rehearsal room can be just as important as the work that's been put on stage.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it only feeds into the work.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was a very, very special time in my life. A lot of the cast had already been on the journey with the Noongar Sonnets for the last 8 years.
Yeah, me and you just, like, hopped on in the last, like, 6 months.
Yeah, so Cez and I were...
And Mark.
Yeah, and Mark Nanna.
Yeah.
We came on a little bit later and had a few weeks to... to get our tongues around the language.
I think I had a couple of more months, but that was it.
Yeah.
Like what you were saying about how the rehearsal process is just as important as the performance process. Like I think it's kind of exemplified like by the fact that we had met for the first time during that show. And during shows, it's quite common to get really, really close during the show, but then that usually doesn't tend to linger. But I think after an 8-week rehearsal process,
yeah.
doing a show like that, it was kind of inevitable that the cast was going to stay as close.
We're going to stay close and continue to work together
yeah.
as the Hecate family.
Because I remember in Hecate, we used to talk about how Lady Mac was like Fleance's second mother.
Yeah.
And now 4 years later, that's very
you're still
much.
Like my daughter.
You're still like my second mother. Like
yeah.
you have that relationship developed over those kind of couple of weeks. And I will just always remember, I just have to mention this memory. I will always remember you and Dad. For context, my dad played Macbeth. And no, I never watched their reunion scene. To this day, I have not seen it. I left the room every single time they rehearsed it. And when we actually did it in the performance, I was facing the back. Thank you, Kylie. I know that wasn't for me, but I greatly appreciated that. but I remember both of you, I think it was a scene where they were mad at each other, which is a good few of them, and you both had the word
Karawarabin.
Yeah, that one.
Sorry, Kylie Bracknell, if I'm still saying it wrong.
And Karangabin.
Karangabin.
Yeah. I just remember Kylie standing in front of you and Dad and getting you to repeat it like
over and over
10
again.
Times and me sitting down and being like, I'm so glad I don't have that word.
Yeah. There was that one word.
Because the inflection, you naturally go to put it in the middle, but that's not how... That's just kind of the way English has taught us to speak. And that was an interesting challenge, which I guess we should have anticipated, but the idea of how we'd naturally go to talk Noongar in the way that we talked English, so then you kind of had to shift the whole way you spoke.
Exactly, and you had to shift your whole thought process.
Mm. And learning how to project in that is so hard because it sits so far back.
Yeah, and your tongue placement, where you're placing your tongue.
So it's like... How do we project?
Yeah, it's still learning. Still learning. It's a continuous journey language.
Yeah.
I can understand it a lot better than I can speak it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really exciting journey to be on, and I'm really proud to be on it.
Do you ever do the thing where when you listen to people do acknowledgements or welcomes in language and you sit and you try translate what they're saying?
Yeah, while, I do it all the time.
But then it gets really hard because elders, there are some elders who speak it so well, but so fast.
Yeah.
So fast, and it just rolls off their tongue so naturally that you almost can't quite like keep up because it's so impressive.
Yeah, for sure.
You have many memorable moments on stage, but we all know what the number one moment is.
When you broke your toe?
You are, I think, the third person to mention that. I think almost every single person has mentioned the fact that I broke my toe on stage. That was pretty memorable. But no, you getting proposed to.
Yes, yes. So we recently done a play called Dating Black, written by Narelle Thorne.
How recent is 2021, babe?
Sorry?
How recent is 2021?
I know. A great little play, a little rom-com about dating after you're 40 and what that brings and how much baggage a person has and whether you could be related to the person that you're dating because you're a black fella. But my now husband was cast as my love interest.
Which was also the first time he'd been on stage in about 20 years.
20 years, yeah. Last time he was on stage was King Hit, I think.
Yeah, the first one of it. Mm, yeah. Mm. Okay, back to the proposal.
So, it was closing night and we were taking final bows.
By the way, their characters in the show had just gotten married.
They had just gotten important. Married, so we were dressed in our marriage outfits and all ready to go, and we'd done the bows, and then Annie Raymond Morrison was in the play, Tegan Mulvaney was in the play, your dad, Maitland Schnarf.
Who did not tell me about any of this.
Yeah, nobody told me. They kept it a big secret. Then Tegan and Annie Ray came out with flowers, and I'm like, oh, okay, flowers, closing night.
That's cute.
And then Derek walks towards me and gets down on his knee. And I sort of like panic and run in the other direction.
You did? I think like someone caught you.
And only Ray caught me and dragged me back. And yeah, he proposed to me on stage in front of 200 people. So
that video is one of my favourite things in the whole wide world, because I remember being at Pride that night and just sitting down in the quiet area and scrolling through my phone, and suddenly I see this like video of you getting proposed to, when I called Dad. I was like, Dad, why didn't you tell me this just happened?
Yeah.
This is so important.
Yeah, yeah. It was a great night. It was, yeah, really wonderful and a beautiful surprise. And they were all very cheeky because they kept it a secret.
Maitland was very proud. Dad was very proud of his, of him keeping that secret, I think.
Oh, yeah.
In the video, you can see him in the corner looking like real cheeky and happy about it. Which is, I feel like, quite on brand for the two of you.
Yeah.
It was really funny watching you two play brother and sister in that show.
After we played murderous husband and wife.
Oh, good Lord. But with the brother and sister, like, that's just kind of how you are in real life.
Yeah, that's just how me and Maitland are in real life. And, you know, the beauty of Dating Black was to do something that's not trauma.
Yes, I do remember Dad coming home from rehearsals and being like, it's really nice doing a show that doesn't, you know, vaguely traumatise me.
Yeah, it was really refreshing, and also doing a play that everybody can relate to.
Yeah.
It was really exciting.
It was really beautiful seeing you all on stage, because it was once again one of those things where you could tell that the relationships on the stage were actually so similar to the relationships in real life, bar like Dad and Tegan, obviously. But like the bit where like Nana Ray would tell Dad to shut up and drink his tea still goes down as, I think, the best moment on stage I've ever seen. So actually, on the topic of lovely memories from theatre, do you have any other, like, top moments from your days performing?
I would say getting married, of course. Working with my grandmother's sister, who is my grandmother also, on stage, Nana Dot Collard, and watching her tell this beautiful Dreamtime story. And I was 15 and I was I just fell in love with theatre that day. It was so captivating.
It's one of those things where you see it and you're like, that's what I want to do forever.
That's what I want to do. Yeah, 100%.
That's cool. So you now have a master's, which is very fancy.
Yes. So off the back of Hecate has given me so many opportunities. So Clint Bracknell, who's a professor of musicology.
Which is just, what a title. So good.
Yeah. We got given the opportunity to do a master's in research. And so I took the opportunity up on a scholarship. Mm-hmm. So it was really nice to study and get a regular paycheck as well. It does help.
The joy of being in the arts means that's not very common.
Yeah. And I got the topic agenda. So I, again, took the focus on my grandmothers and that disconnection of country. And I wrote a play with an exegesis. So
may you explain what an exegesis is? Because I do not know.
So an exegesis is you write an essay about how you came about your research,
okay, that
your methodology
sense.
And the creative process. So what I done was my grandmother was a lover of crossword puzzles. She was a very, very intelligent
my
woman.
My nan was like that too, yeah.
So I created a methodology to write my play through a crossword puzzle. So
what? That's so cool.
My grandmother would sit down and ask questions and answer the questions to the puzzle, and that would prompt her stories about her life.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's the play I've written. So, yeah, it's really, really exciting. So I'm still working on doing that now and trying to get some funding and hopefully be up on stage next year.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, it's just a one-woman show. Well, not just a one-woman show, but, yeah, be really exciting.
Oh, that'd be so sick. You're so cool, Bobby. Well, there you go.
Thanks, Zara.
Jesus Christ. Also, this podcast is surprisingly calm for the both of us, which I think is kind of cool. Obviously, doing a master's and writing a thesis and an exegesis and all of that quite high academic stuff is a very different experience to regular rehearsals and being on stage. How did you find that?
Flipping from the academic to the creative?
Yeah, how was that? What was that like?
It was difficult because I find if I'm not being creative, I can get a bit ditzy and flaky. Because I just want to create.
Yeah.
That's why I'm not a very good producer. Maybe I can be a producer. So I struggled a little bit, but I put all my focus in the creative element first.
Yeah.
And then switched to the academic and wrote to what my creative process was.
Good way of doing it. Because then you kind of got to highlight the bit you did enjoy.
Yeah.
And then just kind of doing the bit you didn't enjoy didn't feel so bad because it was based off the bit you did enjoy.
Exactly. And there was a lot of practice as research as well. So when I did go in and do other shows, I could take what I needed from that and work it into my paper.
Oh, that is handy.
Yeah, so it was really, it was really cool.
So fancy now. It must be so cool being able to say that you have a master's, although I do consistently forget that you have a master's
and then it comes up. I consistently forget that I have a master's too.
It's just so cool.
Yeah, so we've all been given the opportunity to pick up PhDs, but I'm not ready for that at this stage.
But one day.
One day.
One day you get to call yourself a doctor, which I think is the most important reason to do a PhD, is to just be able to tack on doctor to the beginning.
Exactly.
I could imagine you. That'd be very cool. So in addition to kind of everything else you've been doing, you are also now the Associate Director for Yuri Arkham Theatre Company, which recently celebrated 30 years last year. Yuri Arkham has been described as one of the most significant theatre companies in the country and possibly the world for its contribution to culture. What is it like working within the company rather than being on stage and leading from that side of things?
It's very rewarding, but also I get the opportunity to discover new ways of working. Discover new ways of thinking about my work and discovering new ways of implementing that.
Yeah.
in my own practice.
Yeah.
Which I think is really important. I've taken the opportunity to step back from the stage
for
a bit and focus on my directing.
Yeah, I was going to mention that because you're also going into directing now as well, which is a whole other canon of worms.
And what Yuri Yarkins does well and what we're really focused on is providing pathways and opportunities for people to direct. So the artistic director, Maitland Snars, is giving me this amazing pathway. So I started off with directing Nyala Kadar, which is a really important piece around language with Waitco. It's a youth piece. So Zara, you directed it yourself twice, the 2 years before me. And then the next step in that pathway is to direct children's show, the primary school shows, and then I step up to direct the high school shows. And these are tour, metro tours, and then the opportunity to direct something main stage next year.
That's so cool.
I know. It's really, really
cool. It's been really cool, like, seeing you do all these, like, go into all the all of these different pathways and just, it's been very exciting, like, all the like the amount you've done in the last 4 years.
Yeah, and it's really exciting because I'm ticking a lot of boxes of things that I've always wanted to do my entire life, and getting into middle age, it's all starting to happen for me.
Yeah.
So I got the opportunity to work on Evernow Festival, which was...
Which was stunning, by the way. Yeah. So good.
Yeah, so with Marta Kitch, Delaray Morrison, Charlie Caruso, Kylie Bracknell again directed that. We had some amazing dancers on stage, Jack Collard, Ebony Maguire.
Man, that boy can jump.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. Anyway. So I ticked the dancing box as well.
You did!
And I got to sit in that beautiful rehearsal process that's held so well. But the opportunity to do amazing things and work with amazing people. And what I'm really excited about now is the young talent that's coming through and providing platforms for the rest of the country and the world to see what we do here on Noongar Boodja.
Yeah.
Because we lead the way. We lead the way in theatre. We always have.
Yeah.
And I think that really needs to be cemented for the next generation.
You also answered the next question I was going to ask you was, what's the legacy you want to leave on stage?
The legacy I want to leave on stage? That theatre is healing. Theatre is culture.
Mm.
It's part of Black culture. Mm. Storytelling is part of Black culture, and I want these young fellas to shift away from being shame and embarrassed. Shame and embarrassment is not part of Aboriginal culture. It's a Western construct that came to us with colonisation. So you young fellas, don't be shame to get up there and dance. Don't be shame to get up there and sing and act and tell your stories, because we all want to hear them.
God, you were so eloquent. It's actually the biggest thing, not the biggest thing, wow. One of the things I've just taken from doing this podcast is how amazingly eloquent you are at, like, putting ideas across.
Oh, thank you. I think the same about you.
Oh, stop it. but it's so interesting because we do spend a lot of time together and we, you know, we talk quite casually a lot of the time. Getting to hear you speak in this way has actually been really, really lovely.
Oh, nice.
Thanks. I got one more question left, which is what I've been asking everybody, which once again, you've kind of answered, but that's fine. What are your hopes for the next generation of First Nations storytellers?
That maybe we can shift a little bit away from trauma. That I want to hear stories of their truth, their own personal truth.
Of us just existing.
Sorry?
Of us just existing in the world.
Yeah, just existing in the world. Like your beautiful piece, Salted Pretzels. and plays that Indigenous people act in, but they're not Indigenous identified roles.
Yeah, that we can... that there is so much more than the box that we've been pigeonholed into.
Exactly.
That if everyone else can play roles across the board, then why can't we?
I agree.
Thanks, Bobby.
You're welcome. Thanks, Fez.
thank you so much for joining us today on Songlines. It has been wonderful, and I'm really honoured that I get to listen to you speak. You're the best. Love you.
Love you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me on this month's episode of Songlines. Our guest today was Bobby Henry. This episode of Songlines was produced and edited by Danielle Raphael. Our music is by Mardukic with artwork by Rain Ryder. Big thanks to Kobe Arthur Morrison for his production consultation. Next time, we are joined by gospel blues legend Kankua Nagara in the studio to chat about her music and advocacy.